Hello and welcome to episode 73 of A Little Bird Told Me, the podcast where two freelance writers tell you all the tricks of the trade. We're here to save you from mighty embarrassment and mortifying mistakes and guide you to the very top of your chosen profession, which is a wonderful one. Freelancing is a funny old world and we want to help you along the way. So tune into this podcast every 2 weeks, and if you go to alittlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com, you can subscribe there to ensure that you never miss an episode. You can subscribe using iTunes, RSS feeds, or Stitcher Smart Radio, and we've made it really easy to sign up and be the first to hear our latest words of wisdom. On our page at alittlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com, you'll also find any links that we mention in the podcasts, plus our own websites and social media feeds, and the A Little Bird Told Me Facebook page too, which is full of very handy discussions. I am Laurie Hartshorn, and this week is a solo episode with me. Pip and I will be back in a fortnight's time to tackle another topic as a dynamic duo, but in the meantime, Pip is hale and hearty, and I am here to guide you through another topic. This week, what I'm going to be talking about is something that's been featuring quite heavily in my workload over the last 2 months, both in terms of the work that I do myself and in the work that I outsource to other freelancers and therefore manage. And that's writing for the web, both blog posts and static web pages. Now, these are written with the intention not just of informing the reader about a product or a service or an occurrence, but with the intention of improving the website's search engine rankings. Now, what this means, in simple terms, is that there are certain formatting conventions that need to be observed, as well as things like keywords that need to be included. And like any kind of writing, perhaps slightly more, it can be quite daunting. And I think we all know, if we've done any kind of writing, that there's nothing worse than just sitting there staring at the top of a blank page with a blinking cursor on it and having absolutely no idea how to get started. Now, the thing with SEO web copy is that when you have to juggle things like subject matter, house style, you know, it might be that your client prefers a sort of a cheeky, chappy tone, or they might like their online content to be quite formal and corporate, and things like keywords and headers and calls to action and bullet points, it can all seem like just a bit too much to handle, and it can put the extra pressure on when you're trying to think of how to get started. So getting the first words down on the page can leave you feeling like you don't want to write anything at all, which is not great when you've got deadlines looming and you've got a big to-do list. So what I'm going to do today is look at some ways to break down pieces of writing like this, very much like a puzzle, so that you can get those words down on paper and get those all important factors included. Now, I started out, in terms of training and education and qualifications and things, as a translator. And it's quite a similar process, actually, writing for the web and translating, because if you just sit down and write whatever you want, say creative writing, you can literally put down on the page whatever you feel like. You can do what you want. Whereas with translation and with web copy, similarly, there are constraints. You know, there are limits. There are things that you have to include. There are structures that you have to follow. And although there are differences between those constraints, it is helpful to look at it as a bit of a puzzle, and I think it's been really helpful for me to come from a translation background and then to move into copywriting in that sense. Now, one of the first mistakes that people make when they're approaching writing a piece of web copy, or it's perhaps not a mistake, I should say misconceptions that people have, is thinking that they need to start at the top of the page with the title or the first paragraph and then just work their way down. Now, it's not the case at all. In fact, it's probably the hardest place to start. Because if you think about it, your title and your opening paragraph, particularly in a blog post, they often have to sum up the rest of the piece of work that you haven't even written yet in a really eye-catching and concise way. They have to grab readers' attention and preferably also include something in the way of keywords and phrases. So they're there as your first impression, not just in terms of content, but in terms of style, and they have to really pack a punch. And that's very, very hard to do if you're feeling a bit daunted by a piece of writing. And then you have to sit there and come up with some awe-inspiring title and opening paragraph. That can all just seem a little bit too much. So the key to writing SEO and web copy is to stop thinking like a reader and start thinking like a writer. Now, as a redo, I would move naturally from the top left to the bottom right if you're reading in English. There are no real exceptions unless you find yourself so enthralled by a piece of online content that you have to read ahead and find out what happens at the end, like you would with a novel. But joking aside, writers don't need to be, and indeed writers shouldn't be, bound by the top-to-bottom reading convention. There's no reason for you to be limited by that when you have so many other things to keep in mind. Now, as I say, writing for the web, whether it's static web copy, as in a web page, or whether it's a blog post, it's like a puzzle. It's like a jigsaw puzzle. What you need to do is think about the aspects that need to be included. And you'll find that, especially in blog posts and web content where you're struggling to meet the word count, starting in the middle or working from the bottom up even can make a massive difference. Now, thinking more along the lines of this kind of jigsaw approach, what you need to do is, before you start writing anything, take some time to think about the various structural, linguistic, and other components that need to be included. There are loads of them. These can include, like, a catchy title. It might or it might not need to contain certain words or phrases. You need to think about the length. It can't be too long. It shouldn't be too short. You need to think about current title convention. You know, there's loads of information on the internet. It's constantly being updated about titles that turn readers on, titles that turn readers off, click-through rates. You need to think about your content. You know, your title, as I say, it needs to summarise the content that follows without giving everything away. It needs to tempt people. Another thing that you need to include in your writing may be subheaders. You know, these are used to break up a piece of writing, introduce new sections. These may need to be formatted as H2 text, header 2 text. They may need to include keywords, long tail keyword phrases, or other items like products and service names. You may want to include bullet points. These can make content, particularly when it's designed to inform about or sell a certain product or service, these can make content a lot easier to read. And they're also a great way to include keyword phrases naturally, because you can often use clauses or standalone phrases as bullet points rather than needing to build whole sentences. In fact, you don't usually put whole sentences as bullet points, so it's a great way to get your keywords in. Quotes are another thing that you might need to include. In some pieces of online content, things like press releases, case studies, news stories, your client might want to include a quote of their own. They might want to quote a happy customer, whatever. So you need to know whether these need including. And then you can estimate how much space they might need and mark out where they might be in the text. You know, 2/3 of the way down the page is usually where they end up. But that's, you know, obviously your mileage will vary on that. Facts and content, the basic building blocks of your article. This might be information about a product or service. It might be research that you've gathered elsewhere on the net or in books. It might be content from a news story that your clients asked you to summarise and use as background for one of their products or services. Another thing you will almost certainly need to include is a call to action or calls to action. I think it's fair to say that almost every piece of online content will require a call to action or several in some shape or form. Now, this might be all the way through the text for very salesy pieces like sales letters. It might be just at the end for things like promotional blog posts. It might just be in the footer for informative blog posts. You know, something as simple as tell us your views in the comments or connect with us on Twitter, that's still a call to action. And it needs to happen, you know. You don't always want to be selling to your reader. People don't always want to feel like they're reading something super, super salesy. But you do usually need something along the lines of encouraging engagement at the very least. Following on from that, social media footers. You might need to include regular sort of formulaic conventions like social media footers, notes to editors, or other in-house blurb, you know, to find out more about X company, visit www.blahblahblah.com. Alternative, you can connect with us on Twitter or Facebook, you know, just follow the links here, yak, yak, yak. So there's lots of things to include. You've got plenty of pieces in this big jigsaw. So when you have really thought through what you need to include in this piece of writing, it's time to get started, and that's the daunting bit. So no matter where you get started or where you decide that you're going to get started in terms of top, middle, or bottom, it's important to get all the information that you're going to need in the same place before you write a word. Otherwise, you're on track to write something completely amazing and then find right at the end that you've forgotten to include or integrate something completely crucial. And it's not always easy to go back and fit something in. What I suggest doing then is gathering all your notes, all your research, anything you found online, pull it all into one Word file or one word processing file, then italicize it or color it, anything that's not written by you, to make sure that you don't inadvertently plagiarize something, because not only is it unethical to plagiarize somebody else's writing, it'll also come up as duplicate content and that'll affect the quality of the piece of work that you give in. Stick any keywords that you need to target at the top of the page in bold or in a bigger font so that you can keep referring to them as you craft the piece of work. If you need to draft SEO titles and description, these are otherwise known as like meta title tags and meta description tags, it's good to puzzle those out before you get started. You know, puzzle out how you can include keywords there naturally and without overstepping the character limit. Now, keyword stuffing is penalised by Google, so don't go overboard. Don't just put a big long list of keywords there and hope that that's what's going to show up on the search engine. Just try and incorporate a few popular words and phrases into your meta descriptions because they'll catch people's eyes as they search on Google. Now, in terms of length, just a quick note on sort of meta titles and meta description tags. If you keep your meta titles under 55 characters, you can expect at least 95% of them to display properly on the search engines. When it comes to your description, you've got about 155 characters to play with. And it's good to include some kind of call to action in there or contact method. So, you know, talk to us today, plus email address, plus a phone number. So, going back to the notes as a whole, once you've got your notes and your keywords and any meta stuff out of the way, it's time to start deciding how you want to structure the piece. Now, it's a good idea to go through your notes and sort of drag them about a little bit, you know, drag them to different parts of the page so you start to get a rough idea of the order that you'd like to cover these things in. Now, you can use this as an opportunity to draft out some rough subheaders if you'd like, so everything's nicely separated. And you can write the subheading properly if you want, or you can just put subheading needed. You know, as long as you've got something there that tells you that that's where you're going to need a subheader and that's where there's going to be a split in terms of your content, that's fine, and then you'll know what to include. You can start dragging bits and bobs around. Fill out any easy and formulaic parts is the next step. Now, from my experience, I have some blogging clients, some regular blogging clients, who like to have a standalone social media call to action at the bottom of the page in H2 text. You know, the kind of come and follow us on Facebook, etc. And that's all below the actual post itself, but it's included. Now, I always stick that in straight away because it fills out a good 40 to 50 words of the, say, you know, 450 to 500 that I have to write. So immediately, that's a tenth of the post written, which is a super big bonus, especially when they give me something quite boring to write about. So on a page of static web copy, it might not be come and follow us on Facebook as it would be in a blog post. It might be a contact us today style call to action. And that's probably something you're going to need on, I say every, obviously it's a generalisation, but if I say it's something you'll need on every page of a website, then, you know, you see what I mean. It's handy to have a call to engagement, a call to contact on every page of your website. So likewise, if you know that you need that kind of call to action on there, and you know that it needs to say pretty much the same thing every time, and that's not the same as copying and pasting, by the way, really need to avoid duplicating your content, then whack that in and you've got your job one step closer to completion. So above that little footer section, for want of a better name for it, because we're being quite generic here about whether we're writing about blog posts or static web pages, you'll often need a product or service specific call to action. Now, what I mean by this is kind of, say you're doing a newsjacking post where you take a piece of news that's on one of the news sites, I often get sent towards the BBC. You take that piece of news, you discuss it from the brand point of view, and then you conclude the article with information about a relevant product or service. So say you find a news story about, I don't know, 75% of businesses that don't have a content marketing strategy fail within 6 months of starting up. Obviously, it's complete rubbish. This isn't a real news story. But you could write that from your own perspective and say that it's interesting, that you offer brilliant content marketing services. You know, you can twist things to make the information work for you and your brand. So in terms of tying in the product or service offered by you or your client, what you're likely to need is something finishing the post off, say a paragraph or two at the end, that is going to tie in whatever you're talking about into the product or service offered by you or your client. Now, this section is likely to need to be salesy, informative, quite concise, and it's going to need to contain some keyword-rich links so that your reader can click through to the product or service that you're talking about for more info. So going back to that example, say if I'm writing about how you either hire me or your business is going to fail, then I might include keywords or long-tail keywords such as, you know, copywriting for small businesses, and then link those through to my copywriting for small business page on my website. So, you know, a couple of paragraphs of that and information about my services, and then a contact me, and you've already got a good chunk of the text done. So as you see, as you identify areas that need to be included in the post, it doesn't matter what you do in which order and where you go next, as long as you're making sure that all your boxes are ticked. You're including the things that you need to include. Your post or your page is fulfilling its purpose. You're including the keywords that need to be included. You're allowing people to click through to places where they'll encounter points of contact or points of sale. You know, and what you can do, if you remember what I said about pulling information into these different sections, is that once you've covered the information included in those notes, you can delete the notes that you've made, and that will help you to avoid repetition. It will help you to see what you've covered. It will give you an up-to-date idea of exactly what's left to include in your remaining word count. Now, this non-linear approach is also handy. It's also really handy, actually, if you're working on a really boring topic, as I say, and you're struggling to find 500 words on, say, laundry baskets or fluff collectors from tumble dryers. Write what you can. Just write what you can. Don't sit there with a blank page thinking, right, God, I need a really catchy title about linen baskets. No, write what you can, from the title to the social media footer to the bullet points in the middle of the text with the product specifications in there. Whatever has to be included, whatever's easiest for you, get it down on paper. You'll find out then that you're not dealing with a blank page anymore. You don't have as many words to fill out, and you can potentially then, say if you've got 150 words to kill and you're really struggling, you can start to come up with scenarios about who might find these tumble dryer fluff removers handy, or, you know, it's always difficult when you get your washing out of the dryer and it's covered in fluff, you know, anecdata and things like that. You can start using adjectives and adverbs within reason, obviously, just to edge closer to that word limit. And if you really start with the stuff that you know you've got to include, it's so, so much easier, I promise you. Now, in terms of taking this approach, there's a word of warning that I want to give. And that's, if you do take this non-linear approach to writing, and it's a very good approach to take, otherwise I wouldn't be advocating it, you need to make sure that you do proofread properly at the end. Now, that goes for any piece of writing. Proofreading is a crucial step. It's crucial, people. Absolutely crucial. But in this case particularly, you need to proofread properly. Now, Pip did a really, really good episode quite a while back now, I think, on proofreading your own work, and there was some brilliant advice in there, so I'm going to link to that in the show notes. But in short, what you need to do is take some time out after you've drafted the piece, and then go and assess your piece of writing as a reader would, from top to bottom. So you've written it as a writer, sort of pinging around the page, going wherever you need to, but now you need to assess it as a reader will assess it. Does it flow? Does it make sense? Is everything in the right chronological order? Have you made sure that the first reference you've made to a certain item or event or service contains the most information, while later references are less specific? So what I mean by that, for example, is there's no good saying something like, the ICF commented that, in your second paragraph, and then in your fourth paragraph having something like, the Institute of Freelance Copywriters, brackets ICF, founded in 1983 and based in London, commented that. And that's something that can happen when you take a bit of a flexible view on the order in which you write. So just make sure that you really do proofread. So to sum it up, really, what you need to remember is that copywriting is a bit of a puzzle. What goes into building a piece of writing isn't what people see at the end. So although a reader will read from top to bottom, you can ping around the page. As long as you get the right components into that piece of writing, you know, and you juggle the needs of that article or that post or that page, you juggle its style needs, its word count needs, any other requirements, its SEO, its keywords. As long as you juggle those things and you end up with a coherent, cohesive piece of writing, it doesn't matter what you do to get rid of that blank page in the first place. Don't sit there staring at a cursor and thinking, right, I've got to come up with a title and then the intro and then this and then that. It doesn't matter. Nobody sees your process. They only see the final result. So hopefully that will just have given you a few techniques if you're feeling a little bit daunted by writing for the web, you're writing blog posts, or you're thinking, oh, you know, I need to write some blog posts, but I'm not quite sure how. It's not as hard as it looks, as long as you take a bit of a flexible view to it. It is now time for the, frankly, fabled A Little Bird Told Me recommendation of the week, in which Pip and I share something that we've seen or thought or come across over the course of the last couple of weeks that we think you might find interesting or helpful or just generally rather marvellous. My recommendation this week comes off the back of a question that I've been asked by quite a few people, weirdly, over about the last month or two. And the question is how to include certain keywords or phrases in your web copy, particularly when they involve a keyword followed by a location. Now, what I mean by that is, I'll give some examples. It tends to be the way that people search online now, you know, whether it's taxi firm Chicago or massage therapy Sheffield or, I don't know, organic supermarket Manchester. It tends to be the item or the product or the service followed by its location. And these can feel really, really hard to impossible to include in your web copy. Now, that doesn't make it optional. What I've had recently, very frustrating experiences where I've outsourced pieces of work to so-called SEO copywriters, and I've given the brief, I've given the titles, I've given the subject matter, and I've said these are the keywords that need to be included. Now, from one copywriter, I had three posts back with no exact matches for my keywords, which made them completely useless. They were completely useless pieces of writing. It didn't matter that they were well written and they were coherent and the grammar and the spelling was all fine. The fact was I needed these keywords including. So for the sake of argument, let's say it was organic supermarket Manchester. There was no exact match for organic supermarket Manchester in the post about organic supermarkets in Manchester. There was nothing. So what that means is that the post wasn't going to do anything in terms of showing up on Google. Because it's not a match. So if anybody's searching for organic supermarket Manchester, Google's not going to recognise that as a good result for them. So although it can be really, really hard to include these phrases, it doesn't mean that you don't have to. You do. If you need to include a keyword, you need to include a keyword. What I've been asked recently, and this comes to my recommendation, is how the hell to get these keywords in. Because who says organic supermarket Manchester? You know, organic supermarket in Manchester. Fine, you're laughing. Brilliant, it's not hard. Organic supermarket Manchester, quite a bit harder. So you have to be sneaky. And sometimes you have to, and it pains me, truly it pains me physically to say this, sometimes you have to compromise on grammar. So looking at organic supermarket Manchester, there are a couple of ways, as I say, that you can start to include this. One of them involves punctuation and one of them involves being a little bit lax on your punctuation, which, as I say, it pains me. Now, the first way you can do this is to split the keyword using punctuation. Now, the jury's out. I've chatted to Pip about this. I've searched online and I'll be honest, we're not completely sure. The jury is out on whether punctuation affects a keyword being classed as an exact match by Google. However, it's better than nothing. So if you say, if you're looking for an organic supermarket, comma, Manchester is a great place to go. So you see that you've got those three words together, and that gives you a good chance at least of being picked up by the search engines for having an exact match for that phrase. You can also do the same with having two sentences. So split it not with a comma, but with a full stop. You're spoilt for choice for organic supermarkets, full stop. Manchester is chock full of great places to shop. So that's two sentences, but again, you've got those keywords all together and just bridged by a little bit of punctuation. Now, because we're not sure, and because I can't find any yes or no answers to whether this really does affect exact matches, what I've started to do that wounds me to my very soul is to leave out punctuation for things like subordinate clauses sometimes. Now, what I'll try and do is make sure that this is within a short sentence, somewhere towards the end of the post, usually. If I can put it somewhere that's not really going to attract a lot of attention in a blog post, say, or in a web page, then I will do that. So the same examples, you know, like for organic supermarkets, Manchester is a great place to shop. And normally you would have a comma after the supermarkets, but I've taken some time to just leaving that out. Now, as a writer, it hurts me, as I say, because it's not correct grammar. However, it does get the exact match in there. If you're looking at writing a blog post of about 450 to 500 words, Pip and I agree that you could do really with having at least one, preferably two or three, exact matches in there for your keywords. And then sort of as many variations as possible without it being keyword stuffy. So really, you've just got to be a little bit savvy in terms of including these kinds of phrases in header 2 text. I've been known to say things like organic supermarkets Manchester style, depending on the tone that the client is happy with. If they're quite informal, that can be a way of making it work. H2 text at the bottom, as I say, sometimes my social media calls to action, my clients prefer them to be written in H2 text, just for that added boost of SEO. So I can say things like, for organic supermarkets, Manchester people should go blah, blah, blah. And again, no comma. So then you've got the H2, you've got the keywords, exact match. And it's not something that people are going to find really, really intrusive or jarring in the middle of a post. So that is my sneaky way to include these location-specific keywords, because I've found that people that I've outsourced work to have sneakily left them out. And that's not a solution. You really do have to think your way around these things as though they were puzzles. So that's one way to go about it. So if you've got any particular challenges, or if you've got any particularly savvy solutions to these kinds of things, do come and chat to me and Pip on our Facebook page. We're at facebook.com/freelancewritingpodcast, because we would love to hear your sneaky solutions. So that brings me to the end of A Little Bird Told Me, episode 73 already. Can't believe it. I hope it's been a useful episode for you. If you've got any questions or comments at all, do come and have a chat with us. You'll find all the links, including the ones to our Facebook page and social media feeds, at alittlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com. And you can also subscribe there so you'll get the latest episodes of the podcast straight to your inbox. In the meantime, I have been Laurie Hartshorne. Thank you so much for listening, and Pip and I will catch you in about 2 weeks' time.